Council is reconvening. Please read the title for item 975.
Authorize a contract with Housing and Development Services, Inc. in an amount not to exceed $1,120,000 for a housing and development core software system.
Thank you. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Madam President. President Fritz and colleagues, the ordinance before you today authorizes the city to enter into a contract with Housing Development Systems for a core business software system for the new Portland Housing Bureau. PHB has made great strides as part of its transition into a new bureau, and our leadership is committed to continuous improvement. To that end, the implementation of a comprehensive software package is necessary to make the operations more efficient. Now, everyone here recognizes that any IT implementation carries some risks. However, I thought it especially important after partnering with Commissioner Saltzman to create the Technology Oversight Committee that my team bring the highest levels of attention to detail and transparency in the selection of this software. To further oversight by my colleagues, I asked Director Van Vliet to provide briefings for each of my colleagues if they wish to have them prior to this hearing. The HDS solution will generate long-term savings for the city and improve data integrity. The Portland Housing Bureau will have a better software program for less money. I'm pleased to welcome Director Margaret Van Vliet and Business Operations Manager Alyssa Marr, who are here to provide you with additional details about this initiative. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you. Commissioners, again, I'm Margaret Van Vliet. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, this ordinance will authorize us to execute a contract with a vendor, Housing and Development Software, HDS, for the purchase of this system. Just by way of a little bit of context, an important aspect of the creation of PHB and merger of prior organizations hasn't been fully completed. And that centers around the implementation of this very loan servicing and data management system for our complex housing investment business. We've been using an old system under contract with PDC, but they've already moved to a more effective system, so it's in our mutual interest for PHB to migrate as well. So your approval of this contract will actually save us money each year, as Commissioner Finch mentioned, while allowing us to streamline business processes and generate more reliable data for management purposes and for accountability. The contract amount, as you see, is for $1.1 million, and that's over 5 years, with $700,000 in the first year and the balance over time reflecting maintenance fees. These funds have been set aside for a couple of years since the creation of the Bureau was envisioned, so we are not asking for an appropriation. I also want to stress that we've enjoyed excellent help and collaboration with our partners in the Bureau of Technology Services and Purchasing in ensuring that the scope and pricing and other specifics are in alignment with overall city interests. From the beginning, purchasing staff took the lead in the complex negotiations to be sure our collective interests are met, and BTS leadership took an active role in making sure risks were managed appropriately. It's also very important to note that we are ahead of the Technology Oversight Committee convening on this authorization, but we do fully expect that as that group convenes, that the implementation of our project will be reviewed and become part of their charge. We've endeavored to adhere to the principles used to establish the TOC and have instituted such things as a third-party quality assurance professional. Now, I know that you all know too well that no IT project is without risk. I want to do my best to reassure you that my assessment is that not moving forward with this product presents actually more risk than the status quo. I want to turn it out now over to Alyssa Marr. She's our very capable CFO and business operations manager. I'm going to let her walk you through a few more of the specifics on this contract, and then we can take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Alyssa Marr, Portland Housing Bureau. What Margaret mentioned is correct. Our existing system carries a lot of risks with regard to our data integrity
and
accuracy.
Can you put the mic just a little closer, Alyssa?
The existing system, if we wanted to remain on it, would cost the city upwards of $2 million just for implementation alone. and it would clearly not meet our business needs based on our assessment for the last year and a half. So for those reasons, PHP was transparent and took adequate time to develop this project. It's been nine months since we initiated the RFP in partnership with purchasing. We spent 7 months in contract negotiations with HDS, and purchasing was the lead negotiator throughout that process. We worked collaboratively with both purchasing and BTS to mitigate contract risks. We extended our negotiation to try to mitigate those risks. And we also selected, as Margaret mentioned, a quality assurance vendor who will monitor the implementation throughout the process. We will also have the Technology Oversight Committee closely involved throughout the implementation, and we'll have a couple of committees that will guide our work. We are really in a critical point in time right now because the service agreement for MIDAS through PDC expires at the end of September. We're ready to advance our capabilities and become more comprehensive in what we do at a lower cost to the city. We have four different systems today, along with several databases, and this fragmentation has evolved over the past 20 years through efforts to manage a portfolio of 1,900 loans, investments, and grants totaling over $320 million. PHP is moving to a hosted software solution with HDS, which eliminates the cost of city server IT maintenance and system support. In negotiating the contract with HDS, we've managed the majority of the risks and put the city in the best position possible for successful implementation. Our partners at City Purchasing and BTS have been instrumental in helping us mitigate those risks. We've contained costs through not-to-exceed clauses for each of the modules of HDS. PHP will further commit to aligning business processes with the software to avoid cost overruns. There will be no escalation of maintenance fees in the first 2 years of the new software program, and we will have acceptance criteria to guide the acceptance testing of system functionality. We have included additional warranty language to ensure all functionality is covered by the warranty. So as I mentioned before, and as Margaret has mentioned, staying with our existing system is far more risky than accepting some level of risk with HDS. It clearly impacts our work processes and our data integrity, and we want to be able to provide good data to our partners, to the council, and to Bureau management. With HDS, we will have one centralized system for accurate and consistent data collection and reporting. We'll have improved business processes through streamlining of project initiation, project funding, disbursement, loan servicing, asset management, compliance, and reporting. We'll have improved internal communication regarding project status and progress. PHP will avoid maintenance costs for the existing four systems in the amount of $227,000 annually. HDS comes highly recommended by a multitude of agencies, and we have seen 40 to 50 implementations of HDS. One of those implementations is Oregon Housing and Community Services. They currently use the system on a smaller scale, and they are fully satisfied with the product and the ongoing maintenance and customer service received. OHCS and PHP are receiving national recognition for streamlining compliance efforts, and in using the same system, we'll see greater efficiencies and easier access to consistent information. HDS has established relationship with HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and regularly updates their system to be in compliance with federal regulations. This is critically important to PHP, given the complex federal funding requirements. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Alyssa, I just have a question before my colleagues jump in. Can you, in the ordinance in section 1, paragraph 4, it breaks out the cost for the software. Could you just walk us through those categories again?
Sure. So the total cost to purchase the software is $352,500, and then the implementation is $302,000. So those are both considered one-time costs, and then you have an ongoing cost of approximately $90,000 to $95,000 ongoing maintenance fees for the software.
As you've done your risk assessment and work with our technology folks at the city, what portion of this do you consider has the highest risk?
The implementation cost of the $302,450.
And could you describe for us a little bit, because I mean we want to be completely forthcoming with people given that some of the history at the city. What are some of the risks have we identified, and what are the steps that we can take to mitigate those risks?
Sure. So one of the risks included in the implementation is doing a time and materials basis for charging us for the implementation instead of doing a flat rate. So let's say you have one module that's going to be $100,000 for implementation at a flat rate. If you did a time and materials at a not to exceed, which is what we've tried to mitigate to, then if you only spend $50,000 through close monitoring and project management, you might actually save yourself some money. So what we tried to do to mitigate the risk, because we didn't go with a flat rate contract, is we put a time and materials basis on each module. So as we implement each module, it cannot exceed a certain amount of money. And so that's how we've attempted to mitigate that risk. And through close contract management, through having the quality assurance vendor monitoring our work, and also having the TOC oversight.
And the second question I want to ask you is, you described this particular software as being software that is used by the State Housing Bureau. And let's be very clear, Margaret, that while you are leaving us soon to go work the State Housing Bureau, that's a development in the last month, and the discussions with this software predate that decision by almost a year. But you described some of its benefits, and one has to do with the fact that we were able to see how it's functioned at a sister organization. You've also described that that they work to get regular updates and alignment with HUD, which is, after all, our regulatory super partner. So my question is, in looking at the marketplace, is there another software that provides the same level of functionality that we've identified?
No. We have not been able to find one that has the full scope of functionality that HDS has.
Okay.
Even our existing application.
And my final question before I turn it over to my colleagues is, you said that the MIDAS contract, and that's the contract that PDC has with the provider, and
correct.
I think it's important for my colleagues to note that even though the loan portfolio migrated to the Portland Housing Bureau, because we haven't had this software and the technology, we've been contracting with PDC to do that function.
That's correct.
But you said that as of the end of September, that contract ends?
That's correct.
And so tell me, what does that, if we don't take action now, this is an emergency ordinance, to give our technology folks the authority to finalize this contract, what are the repercussions in terms of your work, and what are the potential costs that we'd be looking at?
Okay, so I'll address the cost first. So if we continue with MIDAS, really the best practice in IT is for us to continue our service agreement with them through PDC. We have to do a yearly renewal on that. It's $50,000, and PDC negotiates that with MIDAS and basically passes the charge over to our bureau through our interagency agreement. So that's the cost implication. The time implication is that it really condenses down our implementation schedule, and a couple key points in time are the 1098 reporting for our borrowers, which are supposed to be done at year end. We have a little bit of grace period into January of next year, but it really accelerates our timeline for getting the correct modules in place to do the 1098 reporting. So those are probably the biggest factors.
Thank you.
Other questions from council?
So I'm curious, does the state contract have a 10% annual increase in the operating or the service agreement?
We, until recently, and I might ask Scott Schneider from purchasing to comment, I think only up until today or yesterday, we weren't able to receive copies of the contracts for HDS without certain pieces of information redacted, including the percentage increase in annual maintenance fees. We were able to negotiate a freeze for the first 2 years of the annual maintenance fees, so they will hold it at the same amount for year one and year two. That was a compromise that HDS was willing to come to. So I'm not sure if the contracts we received in the last couple days included any information about escalation, but if we wanted to...
Who's here that could answer that question? I'll let you come up if you would and just take the mic.
Hi, I'm Scott Schneider from the Bureau of Procurement. In the past couple days, we've received two contracts. These both came from HDS, their contracts with other clients. One of the two clients' identities has been redacted. The other one was with the Los Angeles LOMOD Corporation. Both of these, with regard to the increase in the maintenance fees, had the same terms that HDS has negotiated in the contract with the City of Portland. They're to a maximum of 10% per year. Neither of them have the maintenance fees fixed in the first 2 years.
But ours is 10%, not a maximum.
It's a maximum of 10%.
Maximum. With a freeze in the first 2 years.
Correct.
That's correct.
So you're saying that the deal that we have on the table is better than the deal that they struck with those two jurisdictions?
It's better in years one and year two. After year two, it's on the same terms.
Okay.
And how is the annual increase then derived at? I thought it was just a straight 10%. How does
HDS makes
it,
HDS makes a determination based upon the amount of updates and upgrades they're making to the system as to what the appropriate charge should be. And then they submit the invoice to us.
And in let me just add, please, that in conversations with them about the rationale for the 10%, they were able to give us some backup documentation about things they've included in past years' maintenance fee escalations. And what I can share is that's included updates that are help all these agencies comply with HUD's changing rules. So they were able to cite very specific things about the home regulations, about Section 8 things, about HUD's system that they were able to match, and that got included in what their customers got in their annual sort of upgrade that's included in the 10%. So we looked pretty hard at the question of what are we going to get for that 10% other than maintenance, and I was satisfied that the substance of the business product that they're offering is reasonable in this industry.
So will they document then the service agreement increase cost? I mean, like,
I'm sure we could probably get them to do that. Yeah.
CPI plus whatever HUD required updates.
Did they ever give us a breakdown for that percentage?
It's not broken down in terms of an inflationary indicator plus whatever they're building in.
I'm just wondering if they will do that prospectively with us.
I think
this is why it's X percent in year three. Mm-hmm.
Let me also just translate that. But I think Commissioner Saltzman is saying that he would be more comfortable if, as part of our agreement, side agreement, or these terms, or just an understanding, that in year three, which is when they would be able to put in for an escalator, that be submitted to us with an invoice describing the basis of that cost. Mm-hmm. And made available to the public for review and inspection.
Sure. We don't have that specifically broken out in the contract, but I think that would be a reasonable thing for us to ask for.
Okay.
Makes sense to me.
Then on the, as I've discussed with Commissioner Fish and his staff in the last couple of days, I'm also concerned about a time and materials, and I can't reconcile what a not to exceed means when you have a time and materials, because if they get to the point where, hey, you've exceeded what we estimate, and they say, well, it's time and materials. And so how do you reconcile those two? What does a not to exceed really mean when you're doing a straight time and materials contract? Or what's the protection?
Well, the not to exceed would be a more granular limit on the ability in the contract to continue to make expenditures through the contract. And so when you hit the not to exceed on the deliverable basis, there'd be a stop. When it comes to managing the time and materials, it'll be up to the project management team to be paying close attention to the invoices that are being submitted to the city over time and make sure that the project's remaining on time and on scope, so that when we get to the end of our available funding, or as we approach it, that we're not getting into a position where we may have more funds than we've allocated.
And if I may, just so I'm tracking what my colleague's asking, because it's an important question to me. We're talking about the potential here. We're talking about what are the mechanisms in the contract that give us some confidence that there won't be cost overruns beyond the $302,000 on implementation?
That's true, and it's also not to exceed on a module by module, or actually not a module, on an implementation by implementation basis. And so there are, I think, five or six implementation pieces for the individual modules, and each of the costs of those are broken out as not to exceed amounts.
Those are subsets of the 302.
But just so I'm clear, it's a not to exceed contract value of $1.12 million. But of that, it's $95,000 a year for 5 years for maintenance, subject to potential increases, freeze in the first 2 years, and then I'll offer a friendly amendment soon that says that it's subject to an invoice on any increases years 3, 4, and 5. The software cost of $352,500, we don't expect that to go up. That's a flat contract. I mean, that's an agreed upon fee. So the risk here has to do with the $302,450 set aside from implementation. And the question is, what are the systems within the contract that give us confidence that that won't be exceeded? Am I right?
That's correct.
And so I guess what I'm still wrestling with, and I appreciate this discussion, but I don't know, let's say module one, just for simplification, it's estimated to cost $1,000. And, you know, they're however many hours into the project and it's looking like they're going to exceed the $1,000. I mean, as a practical matter, we're not going to tell them to stop work, are we? I mean, it's been billed that this firm is so unique in what it can do for us. It sounds like, and this is part of what else has bothered me throughout the discussion, is this feeling that they have us over a barrel, that this is the only, and they probably feel the same way. They have us over a barrel here. What happens under that scenario?
So, I mean, and I look at that compared to a flat rate where you potentially have change orders. So, I mean, I don't know that you're going to see specific language in the contract. I think what we do is we have the systems in place to make sure that we don't do any change orders or do anything outside the scope of the implementation unless somebody's actually looked at that at a very high level, which includes BTS involvement. And I think that we have to use our quality assurance vendor, our project manager, reviewing invoices, looking at what they're billing us for. I really think it's going to come down to how well is this project going to be managed, which I have a high degree of confidence in. And the other piece that I would say is that we received just glowing recommendations about HDS from everyone we contacted. And they seem very reasonable. And I think that everyone will tell you that contract negotiations were tough with them. Well, implementation was great, the product has been great, and their customer service is excellent. So I think you have to consider all things. And I think you can run into the same problem with a flat rate contract where you would have to do change orders, you know, if something was over. I feel very comfortable with our project plan and that this is such a good application that we intend to align our business processes with the system, because they have it really dialed in. They know what they're doing, and they know what the right business process is for this line of business. And so,
was there an option of a flat rate, or was it simply they only do time and materials? I mean, did we have an option to negotiate a flat rate with them? Or?
We never had a feasible option for a flat rate.
We tried to negotiate that with them, but they weren't willing to do that, is my understanding, correct? They were willing to go with the 5 implementations of the modules and do a time and materials not to exceed, as opposed to going with a flat rate for the full implementation.
So in the references you spoke to, was it similar arrangement, time and materials not to exceed, and they performed within those parameters?
Did you ask those questions of the comparables about
the references? Or
the references. That wasn't a question we asked about the flat rate. Did you ask about the time and materials versus the flat rate?
I haven't asked.
I'm assuming if they do time and materials, that's what they did with their other customers. Did the other customers say, yes, they did perform on time for the implementation, or on time and on budget?
Yes. What we've heard. Yes.
And a related question, and I want to give Commissioner Saltzman all the time to ask all of his questions and get all the answers that he needs. Margaret, would you remind me that the funds that we're using to acquire this software and do the implementation, is this, and I should have remembered this, but in the million details that you and I are working, I've forgotten. Is this all general fund, or is this a portion of PDC?
It's general fund. It's actually split between, actually it's not general fund. It's split between the HIF, the Housing Investment Fund, and the home funds.
So it's not general fund.
It's not general fund.
The HIF, the Housing Investment Fund, at one point was an account established with the use of general fund and some other things. As loans have been paid back from that account, we have them in this other thing.
We're not using general fund dollars
Correct.
For this program.
Correct.
And so let me ask you then, my follow-up question is, if, God forbid, there is some point in this process where we incur more than than we have anticipated, where would those funds come from?
Housing Investment Fund.
From the HIF.
From the HIF, or potentially savings in one of our federal sources.
But it would not be your intention to come back to the council and seek general fund dollars for this program?
No.
So just my final question. So who actually spoke to the references?
Our project manager. So she's not here today. No. She works for Triad Technology, and she's a project manager that was hired just for this project. She conducted the reference checks.
So she's going to be the project manager for implementation?
Correct. She'll be working with HDS's project manager on implementation, and then we have a third-party tech systems who will be the quality assurance vendor.
All of whom will be reporting to Alyssa.
So she actually spoke to the references and what you just told me about HDS meeting cost expectations of these other jurisdictions was fulfilled.
Yes, and if you want me to ask her to go back and see if she has notes from those interviews, I'd be happy to provide those to you if you're interested in seeing that.
So, Commissioner Fish, you have an amendment you're going to offer concerning the service agreement, 10%?
Well, I was listening to your thoughtful questions, Commissioner Saltzman, and you've raised this issue about in years 3, 4, and 5, any invoices that we receive relating to any increase in the annual maintenance fees. Mm-hmm. And I would simply move as a friendly amendment that those invoices that we require as a condition of this contract, that those invoices specify the basis for any proposed increase and that they be made available to the council for review.
Second that.
Do we need to vote on a friendly amendment? Okay, please call the vote. Unless there's any further discussion, please call a vote on the amendment.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye. Further questions from council? Is there further testimony on this?
I think unless there are other questions, we have other people in the audience who can answer questions, but this is an emergency ordinance, so it really perhaps we should first poll, maybe, Madam Chair, if you polled the council to see if we're ready to vote and whether there is the sufficient requisite 4 votes to move forward.
Does anybody in the audience want to testify on this issue? You're comfortable moving forward? So it's been a very thoughtful discussion. I think the amendment certainly speaks to some of the concerns. And thank you for the thorough presentation and for being here to answer questions. It sounds like we're ready to move forward on a vote with the emergency intact. Please call the vote.
Saltzman?
Well, I appreciate this discussion. I do have some trepidation about this contract still, that being time and materials that can lend itself too easily to cost overruns, and whether it's general fund or housing investment fund, cost overruns are not a good thing. I do think the 10% maximum is high, but I'm encouraged by the fact we will at least see the documentation and I assume have the ability to dispute it if we disagree. And I do appreciate the fact that there is an independent quality assurance consultant and also that the Technology Oversight Committee will have the ability to weigh in on this as this progresses. Hopefully this will not be something that turns into a headache for any of us and will go smoothly. It's Margaret Van Vliet's last appearance before me, so how could I do anything else but vote aye?
Leonard?
Well, it's already too late. It's turned into a headache for someone. For you?
Fish.
So, first of all, let me just acknowledge that my friend and colleague, Commissioner Saltzman, did have some concerns, which he discussed with us at length. they were concerns that are not only valid but very thoughtful. They led to some discussions before council and then to this excellent dialogue. And so I appreciate that, Dan. You took the care to read the materials, digest them, express your concerns. I think it's safe to say that your concerns are our concerns, and we will monitor this very closely, and we hope that we can, at the end, report back to you that that we hit the mark. And I want to thank my colleagues for supporting this final piece of the puzzle, and it sort of brings us to an important point. 2 years ago, I asked Director Van Vliet to take on this responsibility as director of the new Portland Housing Bureau. And what made it unique was that we didn't actually have a bureau yet together for her to lead, but we asked her to create the bureau and lead it. You know, I had penciled her in for another 1 or 2 years going forward, but the truth is I'm surprised she lasted this long. I mean, this job has been...
So are we.
And
before she was headhunted away, you mean?
I had not fully disclosed to her the extent of how unreasonable my colleagues were. It has been an extraordinary experience working with Margaret and her team, and her many of the team members are here. And Alyssa, every time you come before this council, I feel less guilty about the fact that we stole you from the fire bureau. We're just so grateful to have you. But Margaret, you've made an enormous contribution to the city, and you took on a job that very few people, I think, could have handled with the kind of dynamism and deftness and success that you have. And I will remind everybody listening that the last 2 or 3 years were probably the worst stretch in housing in the history of the Republic, or certainly in the modern era. And it often gets forgotten at the presidential level, but it was a crisis in housing that led to the meltdown in the economy and has continued to dog us. And we asked you to come in and lead the Bureau during one of the most perilous times in our history, to create a Bureau and then to do some very innovative things. And I won't go through the whole record of what you've accomplished, but I think that any fair reading of your record would acknowledge that you helped put Bug Clark Commons on track, that you helped us get the veterans housing in South Waterfront to a point where there's now construction. You created a new bureau. You assembled a new advisory commission made up of a cross-section of dynamic community leaders that is now providing wonderful oversight and advice to the bureau. You put equity at the heart of everything we do at the Bureau, at the heart of our strategic plan and every action we take. You work with the community to come up with a strategic plan, the first for the Bureau, and one that gives a clear roadmap for your successor. You made extraordinary progress in our preservation agenda, what we call 11 by 13. I think you stalled out at 9, but that's only because I think of a death in the family probably delayed the other two, but we'll get there. I could go on and on and on about your record of accomplishment, but beyond those acolytes, let's put it in the human context. Thousands of people in Portland today experience a better life because of your work. They have shelter, they have access to services, and they have a chance for a better life. We don't do this work just to create plans and monuments. We do this work to help people. You have helped people at an extraordinary level for these 2 years. And the only solace that I have as you prepare to leave is that in your new capacity in Salem, you'll be able to help even more Oregonians on a bigger stage. So from a grateful housing commissioner, I want to thank you for your service to the city. You will be greatly missed, but I think it's also safe to say you have left us a very strong foundation to continue to build our work. So thank you.
You want to vote on the ordinance?
How can I vote after that?
Even you forgot why you were here.
At least she didn't rule me out of order, since apparently it's not germane to the vote. I'll rule myself out of order. That's outrageous.
Fritz. Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for voicing what I believe we all agree with. Thank you, Margaret, for all of your service to the citizens of Portland and to us as city commissioners, that you have
taken the lead on these very challenging issues and pulled it together and made a difference in the life of Portlanders. We're very proud of you going on to doing at the state, and I hope that our paths will continue to cross often. Thank you. This last achievement is another step in the way. I'm very glad to see that it's being done within existing resources within the Bureau. I note in the public involvement statement, which again is exemplary, that it's included in the Portland Housing Bureau strategic plan. So it's something that has been discussed with stakeholders, that has been everybody's been included all the way along, and included a minority evaluation in the contract selection. So again, you are evidencing that you walk the talk and you do the things that need to be done to get services to Portlanders who need them the most. So I want to thank you also, and I'm very proud to support this ordinance. Aye. And with that, colleagues, we are adjourned. You are adjourned until tomorrow at 2. I will be in recess till tomorrow at 2. I will be out of town on city business, so I won't be joining you tomorrow. The mayor will be back. We are in recess.